We're doing a different type of electrophoresis tonight, right? Last time you used agarose gel. Agarose is a polysaccharide that comes from seaweed. That was a nice thick gel that you could kind of manhandle. Tonight's gel is much more delicate, and it's made of totally different stuff. What's today's gel made out of? I say, what is today's gel made out of? To repeat, what is today's gel made out of?
Many proteins.
No.
It's
made out of polyacrylamide. What is the overall process that we're doing called? Goes by what acronym? SDS page. Well, what does the page part of that stand for? Polyacrylamide gel electrophoresis is what PAG stands for. PAGE stands for. So anytime you're using polyacrylamide, it's page, but there are different ways you can do this. We are specifically doing SDS page. All right, well, I'll talk about SDS in a minute, but in electrophoresis of proteins, you can electrophorese proteins in their native conformation, meaning how they are shaped in the actual cell, or you can do what's called denaturing electrophoresis, which is what SDS page is an example of. So remember we talked about the three properties of electrophoresing particles that actually determine the speed of electrophoresis? What are those three properties? Charge, size, and shape, correct. Those are variables. Well, in SDS page, what we're really trying to do is eliminate two of those as variables so that only one thing matters to how quickly they electrophorese and therefore how far they electrophorese in a given amount of time. We're going to try to eliminate charge and shape so only the size matters, right? And so this brings up the stuff that we're using, which was called the Leemley buffer, which was blue, the blue stuff you used as your to prepare your samples with. There are five important ingredients in Leemley buffer that each one contributes its own thing to the experimental rationale. Okay, so one of those ingredients is tris, which is what makes Leemley buffer a buffer. So tris acts as a buffer. What is a buffer? Correct. It's a component of a solution that will minimize changes in pH. In other words, a buffered solution stays within a much narrower range of pHs than one that is non-buffered. And so the tris, acting as the buffer component, keeps the Leemley buffer at a pH that's appropriate and conducive to electrophoresis. Another component is glycerol. Glycerol is viscous stuff. And the reason we use this in the Leemley buffer is that it increases the density of your sample. If it didn't have the glycerol, it would have about the same density as the buffer, the running buffer, the liquid that's in your chambers. By adding glycerol, it makes it more dense than that stuff, and therefore, when you pipette it into the wells, ideally, it should fall to the bottom of the well rather than just float. So that's why we have the glycerol, pipetting aid. A third component is bromophenol blue. That's, of course, what makes it blue. Why is it in there? Yeah, the bromophenol blue is tracking dye, as it's called, which allows you to see what's called the die front. That blue line is the die front. You know that that is winning the race, basically. You can't see the protein bands that are forming. They're invisible until you stain it later. And so you know that they're behind the tracking die, and therefore if you stop the progress before the tracking die goes off the other end, then you know your proteins are still on the gel. Fourth component is SDS itself. And what does SDS stand for? Any idea? Yeah. Correct. Sodium dodecyl sulfate, which is a type of detergent. Detergents are made of molecules that are amphipathic, which means there's part of the molecule is polar and another part is nonpolar. SDS does two important things for the purposes of our experiment. One is that it's able to get in there and disrupt the non-covalent bonds between amino acids in polypeptides or multimeric proteins. In other words, the things that give proteins their three-dimensional shape, which are the bonds between amino acids. I'm not talking about between adjacent amino acids holding the polypeptide together. I'm talking about when it folds up. Non-adjacent amino acids come into contact with each other and can have various kinds of bonds forming, right? Things like van der Waals attractions, ionic interactions, and so on. Those are the things that stabilize the secondary and tertiary structure of a polypeptide, and in the case of a multimeric protein, stabilize the quaternary structure, right? Things you've learned about in lecture, probably. Well, SDS gets in there and disrupts almost all of those non-covalent interactions and therefore goes a long way toward, although not completely, denaturing the protein. So SDS is important for part of the denaturation that we want to achieve and therefore partly eliminates shape as a variable. The other important thing it does, though, is that when it gets in there and disrupts these bonds, it interacts with each amino acid in such a way that it coats each amino acid with negative charge. And so it equalizes what we call the charge density of the polypeptide. The charge density is the amount of negatives divided by the mass of the particle. So the longer it is, the more negatives there should be. But when you divide it out, it makes it equal if every polypeptide has a negative charge at each amino acid site. That's what SDS does. So by equalizing the charge density, SDS eliminates charge as a variable. All right? The final component is DTT. What does that stand for? Based on your extensive reading of the PDF beforehand. That stands for dithiothreatol. Now, di, of course, means two. What does thio mean as a combining form? Right, sulfur. So there are two sulfurs in dithiothreatol. Now, I mentioned that SDS disrupts the non-covalent bonds that hold a protein structure in place. What are the covalent bonds that can form to stabilize a protein's tertiary structure or even quaternary? What are those covalent bonds called? No, those are non-covalent. Covalent is the strongest type of bond. They're called disulfide bonds or disulfide bridges. All right, so imagine a polypeptide, string of amino acids, right? Non-adjacent amino acids can come into contact if the thing folds in the proper way. If two non-adjacent amino acids somewhere in two different places on the same polypeptide are cysteine, what's special about cysteine is that in the R group of cysteine, there is a sulfhydryl group. What does sulfhydryl look like? It's an SH, right. It's just like a hydroxyl, which is OH, with the O also bonded to the rest of the molecule. Instead of O, it's an S, though. O and S have the same valence. They're in the same group on the periodic table. So a sulfhydryl is an SH, and there's an SH hanging off of each cysteine amino acid. If two cysteines in different positions come into contact because of folding of the polypeptide, each sulfur, one in each of the two cysteines, loses its hydrogen so that the two sulfurs can bond to each other covalently, and that locks it into place because a covalent bond is very strong. SDS does not break those bonds. Disulfide bonds really stabilize the structure of a protein, which is why you get them in strong proteins. There's a lot of it in your hair, for instance, which is why if you burn hair, it smells like sulfur. Okay? So this is what DTT does. It finishes up the chemical denaturation that SDS couldn't complete. So what the reason this works is because dithiothreatol, as the name implies, has two sulfurs in it. Well, each of those sulfurs actually has a hydrogen on it as well. So dithiothreatol has two sulfhydryls, but they're not interacting with each other. When the dithiothreatol encounters a disulfide bond in between amino acids in a protein, the hydrogens from the dithiothreatol will be donated to the sulfurs in the disulfide bond, turning them back into sulfhydryls, which breaks the sulfur-sulfur bond. And therefore, those two cysteines are no longer interacting with each other. And when the hydrogens are lost from the dithiothreatol, that allows the two sulfurs of dithiothreatol to bond together. So this is how it breaks the disulfide bonds. Does that make sense? So that almost completes the denaturation. It completes the chemical denaturation. But to really drive home the denaturation, you have one final step. What do you do that really finishes up the denaturation? You heat it. Right. And that's the difference, of course, between the no heat and the heat treatment. Even though the no heat vial has been almost completely denatured, and therefore your GFP protein, which is the one that you're interested in and looking at, the band that includes GFP in the no-heat lane, it's nowhere near its original shape. But the part of that sequence that allows it to glow, those few amino acids in sequence are actually still enough intact that they will glow, even though the overall shape is no longer there. And that's why, after you're done electrophoresing, if you look at your gel before staining it under UV light, in the no heat lane, you should see a glowing band, because that GFP gene is still capable of glowing even though it's almost been denatured. Does that make sense? But in the heat lane, it's exactly the same protein, GFP, but now it's completely lost its shape and therefore no longer even glows. And that's why even though the no heat and the heat lane have exactly the same size protein in them, GFP, when you look at the stain band next week, it should be slightly lower than the no heat band because there is still a little bit of shape difference between them that makes them go at different speeds. All right, does that make sense? So that's what you're eventually looking at. Now, one thing we're doing differently from what the protocol says is we're not bothering to cut this thing in half. Your gel is really two duplicates, right? Because you did everything twice. So it doesn't really make sense to cut it in half and treat them differently. Just view the whole gel under UV, and you should see two glowing bands, because one for each half. But you won't see any glowing, you shouldn't see any glowing in the heat lanes. After you take a picture of that, then wash it and put the stain on and you're done for today, and we'll look at the stained version next week. All right, but let me tell you about getting these gels out. you've never worked with these before, you already know how the cassette is. You have to get the gel out in order to work with it, which means you need to break the cassette apart. You have a little aluminum, green aluminum tool that you can get, pry in there and twist. And don't be timid about it, because it'll sound like it's breaking, and that's because it has to break. Breaking is correct. And then once you actually separate the two pieces of plastic, almost always what happens is that the gel will stick to one of those two pieces of plastic, and you'll have another piece of plastic by itself. You can, don't throw that away. Plastic can be recycled, so put it in the recycling bin. The other one, though, bring it over, the one that, the piece of plastic with the gel still stuck to it, bring it over to a transilluminator. You can't do this before you break it open, because the plastic won't let the UV through it. But if you moisten this surface with water first so it won't stick, and then put your piece of plastic with the gel on it so that the gel is downward, then you're making sure the UV is going through the gel. If you put it with the gel up, you won't see anything. Put it gel down, then close the lid, and you should be able to see the glowing through the plastic then. So you can take a picture of that. All right? You're done with it as far as that part is concerned. And then you're ready for the wash steps. So come over and put some water in one of these plastic containers, and then put your plastic and gel complex in this so that the gel is facing down again, but in the water. Put it on the belly dancer, and after a couple minutes, the gel should fall off of the piece of plastic, in which case you can remove the plastic and recycle it. Don't recycle or throw away your dam. Just dry that and keep it in at your station. The dams are reusable. Okay? But you want to wash this thing 3 times for 5 minutes, changing the water each time. Don't put it down the sink. We have a bucket over here for all your liquid to go in. You need to do that wash step, though, because you need to get the SDS out of there in order for the stain to take. So after you do your 3 washes, then you measure out 50 milliliters of stain and just put it in there after you've emptied it the final time. And just label your box and make sure the lid is completely tight. You don't have to dance it at that point. You're done, other than cleaning up. Okay? Everything in the jug, though, including the rinse water. When you empty your chamber, rinse it once, put that rinse water in there, and then dry your stuff. That's it.